I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and causing God to be. If you don't love and lead it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a part of God's. If we don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying key. If you don't love and leave it, let this song I'm singing be warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, the Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening. This morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, a lot of interesting things have been happening, and where shall I start? Oh, yes, well, today I was in court. No, not me. Well, I was there as an observer and to assist Dr. James Sears. And it's one of these kind of strange cases. Dr. Sears was a, or he is rather, a probably one of the most gifted satirists writing in Canada today. And he puts out a fantastic publication called Your Ward News. Your Ward News is under tremendous attack because it's defiantly anti-Zionist, anti-Marxist, against political correctness, against the usual lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, sexually messed up crowd, the Liberal Party in Ontario, long-time spear carriers for political correctness like Warren Kinsella and Richard Warman and others. In other words, it's an opinionated, satirical newspaper. Which, and of course, the politically correct are notoriously humorless, so they don't like it. And we are involved in a long process of harassment of Your Ward News. It started off with a concerted campaign by the anti-racists to to destroy its economic base by intimidating its advertisers. That's right. No, not very nice people. Okay. And then that escalated to complaints under the so-called hate law. Those who didn't like Your War News wanted it prosecuted. Talk about malice. Well, that didn't work. And then Your War News began to be distributed by Canada Post. Well, they went after they complained to Canada Post, and the Postal Workers Union, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, is one of the last holdouts of some strength of the Maoists or the Communist Party of Canada, Marxist-Leninists. So they duly said that the workers refuse to distribute Your War News because it's racist, sexist, homophobic, you know, the usual string of abusive terms. Well, Canada Post rightly told them, it's not up to you to read what you distribute. If you're supposed to tote the mail around and deliver it to where it's addressed. That's your job. Okay, well, that didn't work. Well, the next thing you know, Arch Medler and busybody extraordinaire Richard Warman from Ottawa, he's a professional, likes to try to shut down people. He did that for a number of years on the internet under the old Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act. If he saw postings that he thought that in his somewhat biased view were anti-Semitic or racist, you know, the usual stuff. Disagree with me and you're a Nazi. He used the law, which we subsequently got repealed, to try to shut down people's websites and tax them, hit them with all sorts of fines and restrictions and so on. Well, he got involved and he wrote to the minister in charge of the post office and tried to get her to stop delivering Your War News, and didn't get anywhere with that. So then he filed a complaint with the Canadian Human Rights Commission against the government and the Canada Post Corporation that it was somehow circulating hate propaganda. Now, of course, it's never been found guilty of anything, but that's just his say-so. Well, then in May of 2016, the minister very arbitrarily canceled the mailing rights of the publisher, Leroy Saint-Germain, and the editor-in-chief, chief force behind the paper, Dr. James Sears. Now, this is so sweeping. That is, they could not legally send or receive mail in Canada, not just Your War News. They couldn't send their own grandmother or mother a Mother's Day card. That's how evil that prohibition was. That is now in the process of being appealed. Anyway, this has not toned down the satire one little bit at Your War News. So one of the most humorless people and on the Canadian politically correct scene, and of course he's got lots of competition for that title because the politically correct are all utterly humorless and very literal-minded people. I mean, I don't mean to suggest people are stupid, but you know, I wonder if they even get humor. So, okay, well, this is Warren Kinsella. Now, Warren Kinsella has been an arch enemy of Your War News and of Dr. James Sears. So, some time ago, actually a little over 6 months ago, Dr. Sears believes that Warren Kinsella and his wife were behind a complaint to Child Services. Now that is not only a very diabolical thing to do, but is a very dangerous thing to do. Child Services in many parts of Canada is absolutely out of control with the ability to seize people's children, hold them, investigate. They have widespread powers, and it's very hard to fight or appeal against. And you see, this is a big problem. And we fought cases like this in many parts of Canada. It's a great power they had. Well, Child Services investigated, visited Dr. Sears, and concluded that there is no abuse of children. Anyway, what Dr. Sears wrote was this, that he had sat on this information for 6 months for fear that one of his more enthusiastic supporters might want to go around and club Warren Kinsella for what he had done. Now, that's the sentence. Well, Warren Kinsella, who loves to freak out, and somebody who takes all sorts of measures to take away other people's rights. He likes to get out there in the arena and mix things up and try to damage people's lives or livelihoods. Was now suddenly or claimed to be very, very fearful. His life was in danger. But you read the plain words that were said. Dr. Sears said he'd held off publishing this information for fear that a supporter, he wanted to let tempers cool for fear that a supporter might do this. Now, I think this is a little bit of an exaggeration, a little bit of an out there sort of statement, but this is not a threat. A threat would be, I'm going to come around to your place with a baseball bat and beat your head in. Now, that's a threat. Anyway, Warren Kinsella went off whining to the police, and the bottom line there was they said, sorry, this is not actionable, no threat here. Having failed on that front, he went off to the Crown Attorney, and he's a lawyer. Two different crowns, that's like a district attorney, public prosecutor, two different crowns looked at this and also concluded, sorry, Warren, there's no case here. So, in great frustration, muttering about the Ontario legal system, Warren Kinsella went off to laid a private information, a private charge. Now, this can be done under our system. It's rare, but it can be done. He had to convince a justice of the peace that he had some reasonable grounds. It's hard to imagine looking at the words. It's all very simple. This is what was said. Kinsella thinks he's threatened. It's hard to understand how a Crown Attorney a Justice of the Peace could conclude, at least there's a possible case here. But he did. And so that's what happened today. We went to court on that. Or I went to court to offer my assistance as best I could. Now, you've got to understand the way our system works. Let me give you the conclusion. The conclusion was we all go back to court, Dr. Sears goes back to court on the 7th of September, and on that day he will get the disclosure. Now, what happened today is this, and this is an example of how our courts waste people's time and are so desperately inefficient. This was what you might call a remand court. So everybody there today was there to have their case put over. Not because they wanted to, but because that's just the way things are. And most were put over to another day so that there would be disclosure provided. In some cases, it was put over to another day while they tried to arrange for a lawyer. There are various excuses. And you wonder why some of this could not have been done over the phone. And then then other cases were remanded because the Crown had failed to provide the disclosure, which means all the information upon which they're relying, and it's the right of the defendant to have that in order to prepare a defense. So we see the just egregious inefficiency of the system. So there was no trial held today. Nobody was tried. Everybody was simply remanded to another day. And if you know, you think huge expense to the system. Just say nothing of expense to the defendants. People would probably have to, you know, in most cases, have to take a day off work. So they take a day off work, and they show up, and they sit around, and then finally they're called, and then the case is simply remanded to another day in which they're going to have to show up. Take another day off work unless they're lucky enough to work evenings or unlucky enough not to work at all, and the system is just groaningly inefficient. So finally it came the turn of Dr. James Sears and his co-defendant publisher Leroy St. Germain, and it was now their turn, and they were duly called up, and one of the few spots of humor in an otherwise humorless day was a comment by Dr. James Sears. He was asked, you know, you have to identify yourself. He said, first name James, second name Sears, like the department store. Now, the entire court staff, except for one security guard, were female. I mean, it was just a feminista court. The judge, obviously female, or I should say the justice of the peace, obviously female. Said, well, it's not a department store, it's not in business anymore. Everybody knew that. So I took that as just a little glimmer of hostility, you know. A lot of these feminists don't like men. I mean, it's not that they don't like some men, they just don't like the male species. Am I reading too much into it? I don't know. But it was a sort of, I thought, bitchy rejoinder that I just wasn't called for. So anyway, Sears pointed out that the complainant, you remember Warren Kinsella, all his life was in danger, and he went all over the place trying to get charges laid, and no, he would take him seriously. Anyway, was he there today? No, he was missing in action, which kind of suggests to me this is what we sometimes call a slap suit. It's a way to harass you or to eat up your time or resources. It's not serious that the person making it knows it's not going to succeed. But he does it anyway to harass you. I mean, if Kinsella really was afraid for his life, well, why wasn't he even there today? It's his case. It wasn't the Crown's to prosecute, it was his. Anyway, he wasn't there and there was no disclosure. Now, my advice to Dr. Sears had been to at that point say the complainant or the prosecutor, namely Kinsella, isn't there. There's no disclosure. Clearly, this is not serious. I demand that the charges be dismissed. You know, stop wasting my time, the court's time, and playing games. Anyway, that was not to be. And so a date has been set for the 7th of September when Dr. Sears will again appear in court to do what? To collect the disclosure, which will be, presumably, whatever Kinsella is relying on. One would imagine it's the portion of the article in question, and who knows what all else, if anything. And so it goes. So you would say, well, will there be a trial that day? Well, of course not. There'll be another date set for perhaps a date to negotiate things, if that's possible. Well, I don't think this case is going to see the light of day until, I mean, there will be a trial, if there's a trial, until sometime in the new year. A pretty good example of why our legal system is broken, absolutely broken. The time wasted and the inability to simply make things happen. So here you have a mischief maker, Warren Kinsella, making a complaint, wanting to prosecute a case against Dr. James Sears, but not even appearing today. This is a colossal time waster.
I'm going to read an appreciation, and it's called A Homage to Ernst Sundel. And if you'd like me to send you a copy, just please email me, and my email is paul@paulfromm.com. That's paul@paulfromm.com, paul@paulfromm.com. And I'll be glad to send this to you. It's written by Robert Faurisson, the great French revisionist, a man who's paid dearly for his beliefs. Robert Faurisson was of mixed French and Scottish ancestry, of a French father and a Scottish mother, a professor of language at the University of Lyon, and one of the world's, and a typical French intellectual with a very incisive mind, and one of his standard or almost taglines is no holes, no Holocaust. He's been very curious about the means that we were told were used to allegedly exterminate Jews in Auschwitz, the gas chambers, or at least what we're told were gas chambers. It turns out there are no extant gas chambers. That's kind of interesting. Why would there not be? Because the Germans abandoned Auschwitz in January of 1945. They didn't take all their equipment with them. Well, what happened to them? In fact, what you'll be shown in various places as a gas chamber is really just a recreation. And Faurisson has been very insistent, I don't want to go through all the details, that what we are shown could not possibly have exterminated people. Okay? Just what we're shown is not a weapon of destruction. Well, that's one of his main contributions. He was a big participant in one of Ernst Sundel's false news trials back in the 1980s. And he paid very dearly for that when he was beaten nearly to death by Jewish thugs shortly afterwards. His jaw was broken in several places, many of his teeth knocked out. He was beaten and bloodied within, really, literally an inch of his life. The perpetrators were never prosecuted. So Dr. Faurisson has paid a big price. Oh, of course, yes. The French judicial system, don't think for one moment all those slogans you might have heard about, liberté, égalité, fraternité, liberté has anything to do with freedom of speech. It doesn't in France. Speech is severely restricted. And Dr. Faurisson has been fined on numerous occasions, in one case for one sentence he uttered, not in France, but in Tehran, in Iran, I think about 7 years ago. So Dr. Faurisson has paid a huge price. Anyway, this is, he's, I think, drawing to a close of some of his publishing, and this is an appreciation he put out recently about another towering figure in the revisionist movement, Ernst Sundel. And this is Dr. Faurisson. As the reader will have heard, in France, the person in charge of Bocage, that's a kind of an email, has taken a final bow with the 6,000th newsletter under that name. Thus ends an endeavor remarkable for its range and for the massive work devoted since 1979 to informing us on developments in historical revisionism. This newsletter, number 6,000, salutes a prestigious hero of revisionism, Ernst Sundel, born in Germany in 1939. Those who, given their relatively young age, do not know who this amazing figure is, can ask for a brief biography. Ernst Sundel has shown such energy, such inventiveness, and such disinterestedness that one may rightly assert that without him, revisionism would never have been able to amass so many victories, victories that have resounded throughout the world. When, finally, the collapse of the Jewish Holocaust myth comes about, the Tribunal of History will have to render justice to a sizable number of revisionists, and to begin with, the Frenchman Paul Vassinier and the German Ernst Sundel, who never met, but who, united in heart and spirit in one and the same truly heroic adventure, have indeed fought not only for the honor of their respective homelands, but for the honor of Europe as a whole. And that was always Ernst Zundel's goal, to reclaim Germany's honor from the torrent of abuse and what he thought were largely lies having to do with the World War II, and particularly the so-called Holocaust. Our final message will be a tribute to Ernst Zundel, the German-Canadian revisionist to whom revisionism owes so much, says Robert Frosson. For revisionists, Ernst Zundel has played an unparalleled role with his leaflets, his periodicals, always punctual, in English and German, his help in disseminating so many books in various languages, his radio and television broadcasts, his videos. He's been everywhere and always present to inspire the movement. In 1990, thanks to a formidable undertaking organized, as he know, only he knows how, our cause achieved a particularly fine victory, the elimination from the plaques at Auschwitz of the figure 4 million dead, replaced by that of 1.5 million, and that's actually being lowered again. And one of the very interesting things in terms of historical the Holocaust religion, and it is a religion, it's not a historical fact, it's a tribal tribal history that's now being imposed on much of our elite as a new religion. And one of the fascinating things is it's impervious to the normal laws of mathematics. Traditionally, it was asserted that 4 million people perished in Auschwitz, but a wild exaggeration, but that's what it was, the assertion was. And of those, 70% were Jews, so that would be roughly 2.8 million Jews. Ashamedly, in the early 90s, the figure had to be lowered to about 1.5 million, so lowered by over two-thirds. You would think that the figure of 2.8 million Jews would be lowered by two-thirds, you know, to down to, you know, a million or so. And that would, and the difference, nearly 2 million, would come off the 6 million claimed to be being killed in the so-called Holocaust. But that never happened. And the figures have been lowered more even since. But somehow, the 6 million figure remains sacrosanct. Well, this defies all reason. And no thinking, reasonable person with anything, with grade 8 math, can accept this. You know, this is fantasy. Anyway, and back to Frosson. And it is above all he who, in the manner of an orchestral conductor, masterfully coordinated his two trials in Toronto in 1985 and 1988, bringing revisionism and opponents of revisionism from all over the world there, especially in the 1985 trial, in order to finally organize a courtroom confrontation between the two camps. Needless to say, when subjected to the inflexible cross-examination of barrister Douglas Christie, advised by Professor Frosson, the opponents bit the dust so hard that a man, for instance, like Raoul Hilberg, the Pope of Exterminationism, would refuse to return for the 1988 trial. We think anyone wishing to be informed about revisionism should begin by reading Michael Hoffman's The Great Holocaust Trial, published by Independent History and Research. And if you'd like URL for that, just write to me at paul@paulfromm.com. Professor Frosson continues. Therefore, an end had to be put to Ernst Zundel's exuberant and iconoclastic activity, and it was on February the 5th, 2003, that this hero the word is Professor Frosson's, was literally abducted from his Tennessee home. From that date, that is, for the past 14 years, this man was to find himself gagged, completely unable to express himself on the subject that was his life's work, to cleanse Germany, his country of origin, of the false accusations by which she's overwhelmed. After 7 years in prison, amongst them, which two in Canada were in conditions close to torture, and they were, solitary confinement with deprivation of medical care, and the rest in Germany, 5 years in Germany, he would have to pass a probation period of 3 years, but the 10 years of silence were not to end there. In order to maximize his chances of obtaining the right to return to his home in Tennessee he would carry on maintaining a near complete silence for 4 more years, and our readers will indeed have noted that at our end, that's Dr. Forson's end, we did our best to respect that silence. So he's basically been silenced ever since 2002. Alas, on March 31st of this year, the dreaded final decision was issued in the United States. While the doors stay open to so many migrants, the United States, through the voice of a certain Ron Rosenberg, who of course I don't think was born in County Tipperary, chief of the Administrative Appeals Office of the U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services, which acts by delegation of the Department of Homeland Security, refused the eminent revisionist entry to its territory for all time, thus forbidding him forever from returning to his own home and there beside his wife. However, the law is clear. A person convicted abroad who seeks entry to the United States is to be barred only if the conduct having led to conviction is deemed criminal by United States standards. But denying the Holocaust and expressing anti-Semitic sentiments, which in fact Ernst Zundel has never done, that was actually from the judge, which Ernst Zundel has never done, is Dr. Forson, is just not a crime under American law, noted UCLA law professor Eugene Volokhin. It was only on May 9th when we received a copy of this iniquitous ruling, signed Rosenberg. Readers who wish to have you can actually get the copy. On May 17th, we asked Ernst Zundel for his reaction, and he replied as follows. Hi, I have read and reread the U.S. ruling by Ron Rosenberg and am ever more disgusted. I am so disgusted by this hypocritical charade that I shall find it nearly impossible to force myself to write something about it. But here goes. I've engaged a top immigration lawyer with over 30 years of practical experience with immigration law in the USA. This lawyer handled my case from the beginning. I followed all his advice and U.S. rules and regulations to the letter. All things progressed well. I already lived with my wife in the USA at our own property, running our publishing business. I had been granted a work permit, a social security number, had a comprehensive health checkup, including x-rays, AIDS test. In short, I was fingerprinted by the FBI, even interrogated by a special agent of the FBI, passing all tests required with flying colors. There was only one more visit to be undertaken with an immigration official before I would be granted permanent residence and could live and work in the USA for the rest of my life. We were able to obtain my FBI file after my arrest and deportation. The special agent of the FBI, called Scott Nowinski, recommended to his headquarters that they close the Zundel file, assuming that I would be given residency status. In other words, they found nothing untoward about it. Ingrid, that's Ernst Zundel's wife, Ingrid and I carried on with our lives, being assured by the attorneys that all was only a matter of time and routine. We were totally taken by surprise when, out of the clear blue, I was arrested during a work day without warning, while framing paintings for my soon-to-be-opened art gallery in Tennessee. The U.S. officials did not allow me to call my attorney, and they did not have an arrest warrant. Instead, they claimed I had overstayed my visa, an obvious and blatant concocted lie, their cover story, in order to deport me from the USA. Due to this deportation, which came after the events of 9/11, the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon, I was imprisoned in Canada to determine my status for 2 years. Then I was declared a security threat to Canada, the nation of Canada, where I lived peacefully and productively for 42 years, that's between 1958 and 2000. I was declared persona non grata in Canada. Now, there's a little bit of an explanation there. That was under our security certificate law, which said that under which a person who was not a Canadian citizen could be ordered deported if two cabinet ministers signed a certificate to say that they were a threat to national security. Two cabinet ministers did that in the case of Ernst Zundel, and then there would be a hearing. Now, the hearing is not a trial. Decisions would be based not on beyond a reasonable doubt, but on the balance of probabilities, which is a much lower threshold. There was secret evidence. There was evidence that the defense never saw, by witnesses who were not identified.
we would be given a general summary of the evidence, which of course is very difficult to deal with. At that hearing, the judge in case was one with such an obvious conflict of interest that two different defense lawyers, three times, asked him to recuse himself. The judge's name was Pierre Blay. Pierre Blay had been a Conservative Party cabinet minister. In fact, he'd been Solicitor General, which meant he was in charge of the spy agency under the previous Mulroney government. Problem is, the main witnesses against Ernst Zundel were the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, or Canada's Spooks, or spy agency. We thought there was an obvious conflict. Judge Blay would be hearing secret testimony from his former charges or employees. He would then decide what, if anything, we the defense would be allowed to know. Can he make a fair judgment? I mean, he had been involved with these people. And there's yet another level of suspicion. These people were spies, spooks. They undoubtedly had the goods on many government officials. Did they have, was there a skeleton in Pierre Blay's closet? Don't know. But we asked that he be recused for a reasonable apprehension of bias. In the end, it was found that Ernst Zundel, who had never been convicted of a crime in Canada, who'd been an employer for many years, who employed people, paid lots of taxes, was in other words a perfectly good citizen with some views that some people in Canada didn't like. It was decided that he was a threat to national security. Well, here was some of the public evidence which we challenged. The evidence was presented by a CSIS agent, and this is how they reasoned Ernst was a threat to national security. This is how they reasoned he was a threat to national security. They said that he had sometime, I think, in the late 1970s, attended several lectures by Dr. William Pierce. Now, Dr. William Pierce was the head of the group called the National Alliance. Dr. William Pierce wrote several novels. one of them was a novel called The Turner Diaries. Now, a man by the name of Timothy McVeigh, apparently, or allegedly, read the Turner Diaries. he then was the man who allegedly blew up the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City, killing a couple dozen people. Therefore, it's seen as a terrorist. Yeah. Now, I'm not leaving anything out in this line of reasoning. Ernst Zundel attended two lectures by Dr. William Pierce. He didn't join the National Alliance. He didn't pay any money. He didn't give a donation. Dr. William Pierce wrote several novels. One of them was The Turner Diaries, which talks about a time in the future where there is a white resistance to the racial chaos of America. It's a novel. It's a novel. Timothy Veigh, we're told, read it. Timothy Veigh went and blew up the Murrah Building. Now, Dr. William Pierce, who was still alive at the time, he never been in contact with McVeigh. He didn't tell McVeigh to do it. There's also, of course, a big question whether McVeigh actually did blow up the Murrah Building, but that's another story. But even if you accept that he did, there's no connection to Ernst Zundel. In fact, really, there's no connection to William Pierce. He wrote a novel. What if somebody had read one of the James Bond novels, where James Bond, you know, shoots various people and does sorts of things, and you say, well, I'm inspired to do that, too. Well, is it really the responsibility of the author
of Ian Fleming, the author of James Bond? No. I mean, if some nutcase decides to go and commit murder because of a book that doesn't tell him to do that, then it's surely not the author's responsibility. But far even less is it in any way the responsibility of a person who attended a lecture by that author. Anyway, it was on that incredibly flimsy basis that Ernst was deported to Germany. And Ernst continues his own story. I was deported to Germany, arrested on the steps of the plane which had flown me across the ocean in handcuffs from Canada, and immediately imprisoned in Mannheim prison. There I was tried in court for my writings and broadcasts done in the USA. Some people would say that's kind of extraterritorial law, and these broadcasts are perfectly legal in America. After a lengthy and grotesque trial in Mannheim, I was convicted and sentenced to the maximum term of 5 years under Germany's controversial Holocaust-related post-war laws. Defaming the memory of the dead, which doesn't mean insulting some dead person. What it means is not accepting the 6 million story. I lost all appeals, served every minute of the 5 year sentence, plus another 3 years of probation, and was finally released on March the 1st, 2010. That's my wife Ingrid and I, this is what Ernst was writing, fought in the U.S. courts for 14 years, trying to return to the USA. Virtually always lost, also lost all appeals. We spent untold sums on legal fees and court proceedings. The end result is the ruling by Homeland Security, signed by one Ron Rosenberg, which follows. The Zundel case revealed a great deal about the state of justice and human rights in America today. There's a vast gap in the USA between their reality and American, human rights propaganda. Ernst Zundel continues to describe himself as unvanquished and defiant, and he will not bend. This is the tribute by Robert Forsson. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on RightResistanceRadio.com. Going to be back in just a couple of minutes, and I'll take a short musical interlude here, and now I'm going to play a couple of tunes I hope you'll like. And this is kind of along the lines of Merle Haggard's the song, that my signature song, and that's The Fighting Side of Me. And this is in conjunction with another kind of sassy, out there opinionated lady, and that's Gretchen Wilson. And this is Politically Uncorrect.
A trip to the grocery store or a tank of gas.
That's a family farm that's been in the family for over 100 years being sold.
Are you concerned about the violence and the death?
Seems like I have, less money to spend.
Another deadly day in Iraq as 11 U.S. soldiers.
I'm for the low man on the totem pole.
Thank you. the world already knows where I stand.
Getting an opportunity to come to Canada and writing a Hagley? Wow, man, nobody can say no to that. My name is S.A.C. Vasant. I'm from India. I love to ride bikes. The speed, the thrill, the style.
So here I am planning a trip with Vasant, and there's absolutely nothing that we can do wrong because the Cabot Trail, it's like a playground for motorcycles.
The moment I saw him, we shook hands and we just were connected.
Alright, here we go. Let's go. The Cabot Trail now.
The Cabot Trail, what makes it so good is how technical it is, how alone it is at parts, how in the forest, in nature, on the coastline, it's rough, it's rugged, it's twisty, it's hill climbs, it's just so nice, and it is just an amazing visual experience. You can't get sick of riding the Cabot Trail because it's never the same. So today we're going lobster fishing. I'm on a bike trip and I have to get up at 4:30. What?
I was feeling okay, it's just boating. But when I saw the lobsters with the claw, oh my god. You are going to pick the lobster and you are going to do the banding. That was kind of scary because we have never done that before in my life.
The seafood here is so good, right? So good. We're getting supper.
Friends and family gathered for the Lord. There's an old-fashioned preacher out the straight and narrow way for what few coins a congregation could afford. Dressed in all our Sunday best, we sat on pews of solid oak, and I remember how our voices filled the air. How mama sounded like an angel on those high soprano notes. And when the roll's calling yonder, I'll be there. Looking back now, that little mountain church house has become my life's cornerstone. It was there in that little mountain church house I first heard the word to base my life upon. At the all-day Sunday singings and dinner on the ground, many were the souls that were revived.
note. No, I get you. Okay, now I've got your message, okay? Thank you. And that's Ron Vincent, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. All lots more news and views for our people, and it looks as though we are almost out of time. So I just want to reiterate something I said two nights ago. It was a really sad story about told to me by a German Canadian who was brought up in Alberta, and it was the terrible beating a elementary school elementary school teacher inflicted on his brother back in the Second World War, the boy was there was a minor infraction. He'd come 5 minutes late from lunch. The boy was kept after school, and he was beaten. He was senseless. When his brother came back to after a detention, after the older brother had a detention, the boy was 10 years old, came back and found his older brother unconscious on the lawn of the little one-room schoolhouse, so badly beaten he was unconscious, his black back bloody, and he was not able to return to school for a month. This was an example of the German hatred, the hatred of Germans. We hear far too little of the sufferings of the German people. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
And, of course, the ever-loving dollar. Supplementing our diets can be very important to stay healthy.